Good evening and welcome. I'm Kelly Richards, CEO of the All Access Group and the host of All Access Radio. As a highly sought-after consultant, super connector, trusted advisor, celebrity wrangler, and thought leader, I connect innovators and influencers from Silicon Valley to Hollywood to Madison Avenue. As a trusted advisor, I transform the quality of people's lives. And I'm also the author of the best-selling e-book, The Magic and Moxie of Apple, An Insider's View. Tonight's guest on the show is Roberta Medina. Roberta is the Executive Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Rock in Rio, one of the largest and most successful music festival franchises in the world. Rock in Rio's 30-year track records boast names like Beyonce, Queen, Bruce Springsteen, James Taylor, The Rolling Stones, and Justin Timberlake, just to name a very few. And the festival's unique approach also features the City of Rock, an innovative and gigantic 60-acre complex with a unique lighting system that focuses on the audience, which has now become a global trend. The daughter of festival founder Roberto Medina, Roberta oversees production of the festival in Brazil, Spain, Portugal, and now in the U.S., with its debut coming up here in the U.S. starting in May. Welcome to the show, Roberta.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you. I'm really glad to be here with you today.
Well, thank you so much. We're excited to have you. You know, your father, Roberto, launched Rock in Rio, as we said, 30 years ago. And I understand that it was directly linked at the time to the country's socio-political climate emerging from, gosh, I guess nearly 20 years of military dictatorship at the time. Could you elaborate for listeners that may not be familiar with the origins of the festival way back then?
Of course. Rock in Rio was created back in 1985, and exactly the country was leaving the military regime. So we had a whole generation looking for freedom. So Roberto, my father and the founder of the festival, he's an advertising man. He's not. There are some festivals that are created, a lot of them, most of them, are created for people that love music and likes to do that. But he's an advertising man, and he wanted to promote Rio de Janeiro and also to show to the world that strong youth that the country had, that for the first time in a long time they would be able to show themselves and talk what they think. So he created Rock in Rio to do that, I mean, as a platform to communicate the city and all this movement. But the challenge was really big because, I mean, the purchase power of the people were so low that even selling 1.3 million tickets, that wouldn't pay the bill, because to call the attention of the whole world, we had to have the biggest names in music, the international names. And those big talents wouldn't go to Brazil at that time, because Brazil had a big bad fame in stealing equipment and not paying the talents. So
right.
It was a big challenge to convince all of them to go there. And there's a nice story about this. They has a lot to do with the U.S. It's because Roberto came to the U.S., New York and L.A., did around 70 meetings and got 70 no's. And then the last call was ask for strength and other help, because Roberto had done the biggest show of Sinatra's life in Brazil back in 1980 in the Maracanã Stadium. So they got a strong relation from that moment. So Roberto asked Sinatra's help. Sinatra called a press conference where Roberto had the opportunity to present Rock in Rio to the American press. And then the next day, the American press announced it to the world that the biggest music festival would be happening in Rio de Janeiro in January. And from that moment on, it was when we really had the chance to convince talent to go to Brazil. So it was a tough time.
But and back in those days, I can appreciate the challenges that your dad had to go through. As you mentioned,
sometimes I cannot even understand how they did it back there.
It sounds incredibly unlikely in the face of all those challenges. But in fact, The first festival drew over, what was it, 1.3 million attendees to Brazil.
Exactly.
From all over the world. And we didn't have streaming at the time. So it was, basically to see iconic bands like Queen, Iron Maiden, AC/DC. And, of course, it's only continued on its wildly successful track over the past three decades. So my question to you is, next question, Roberta, were you eager to be involved right from the start, or did you venture into other pastures before becoming an EVP and becoming so actively involved? I recall when we sat together in San Francisco, you said it was like your younger brother.
Yeah, exactly, because I was six when the first Rock in Rio took place, and still in the second one, 1991, I was 12. I mean, I didn't have the idea. I didn't understand what was that, what was necessary to make it happen. So I feel it's my younger brother that I have to take care of it. but the funny part is that I didn't start with Rock and Rio, and it was my father never told us, for me, to me and my brothers, he never told us what to do, neither him nor my mother. So what was really curious, because at home, my father would talk a lot about communication, about dreams, about involving people, and not about production, exactly, not about how you build a stage or how you define lighting and that kind of stuff. And it was funny because my first opportunity to work was as a marketing assistant to a shopping center that were doing Disney World concerts, small concerts, during Christmas time. And that was the time when I had the opportunity to see how you plan where people get in and how they get out, how you do a ticket sales. I mean, all the details of production. And I totally fall in love with production. And that's what I really like doing. And I mean, so I started working before Rock. I was involved with Rock and Rio, especially because Rock and Rio was not taking place for 10 years in Brazil. Between the second one in 91, the third one was only in 2001, because again the purchase power of the people was low, so we would depend a lot on sponsorship to make the event happen. And the cost was so high because, I mean, you pay talent in dollars, and, I mean, the currency is less valuable in Brazil. So the cost was so high that it was impossible to have that much sponsorship every year or every 2 years. So the gap was really big between one edition and the other. And also because Roberto wanted to do something bigger, and that's where I had the opportunity to start. It was 2001 when he decided that he wanted to use Rock and Rio as a platform to communicate social causes. Now it's social and environmental causes that we have been getting involved with. So what we do is a little bit, I mean, our motivations go farther than the music itself.
Do you care to expand on that a bit further at this point, or do you want to come back to that later in the conversation about the causes?
As you wish. I can talk about this now.
You've opened it up, so let's go ahead and talk about that a bit.
Okay, so what we did is, I mean, we wanted to call the attention of our audience. As again, that happens also because the Rock and Rio brand to the Brazilians became an icon. It was a historic moment. So that has a value that, I mean, actually you can't give a value to that. It's very powerful. So we wanted to use this power that, I mean, everything that you talk about artists and entertainment called the attention of the press and the people. So
yes,
we understood that we could use this and this attention to talk something else, and make people get involved with something of looking for a better world, or what each one of us can do in our day by day, small moves, not big things, but what we can do to change the world and do a better world every day. So we decided to support NGO to educate 3,200 young adults
right
in Brazil, because we wanted to do in not only to talk. We thought that talking would be it wouldn't be enough. We wanted to do something concrete. And besides that, we created 3 minutes of silence in the whole country, involving all the TV stations and radio stations. And those 3 minutes were, I mean, an impact of 90 million people at the same time that were seeing images of the planet, images of children, and with phrases provoking them to think about a better world. We are not here to tell to anyone what is a better world, but we want people to think about this and to look for it.
It's an increase of awareness with what you're doing.
Exactly.
And it's incredibly powerful. Obviously, 90 million people is an example of the success so far. Are there some specific favorite projects you have beyond For a Better World that Rock in Rio has supported as a festival across the 3 decades?
Well, there's anything that we can do. It's so good. We have already invested $23 million in many different causes. Between planting 120,000 trees in Portugal, we installed 800 solar panels in school. That's my favorite one, because we installed solar panels in school. This panels produce energy, sell to the net, and this money goes to NGOs. But that's a constant, a permanent flow, because, I mean, what we did was to install the first panels, and then now every year they are generating some money to NGOs to make a better world. So that's a very special project for us. But we have a lot of, I mean, we started back in 2006 talking about climate change as the whole world, not the scientists, but, I mean, our common human beings were getting to know the big problem we had with climate change. And that since that point on, I mean, we have done a lot of changes in how we produce the event and how to make it more sustainable. And I'm glad to say that 2 years ago we got the ISO 2121 for a sustainable event. We were the first event in all Americas to have it, so we are very proud of that too.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's very different that Rock in Rio is doing that. So many of the festivals come and go, and that's it. They happen and they go away, and there's not a lot of continuity or leverage of the festival and the talent and the brand.
What I think is that all of us can do so many simple things. So if you ask me if it is a big deal what we do different now to be a sustainable event, well,
yes.
It needs some work. But it's not that costs more. I mean, you just have to invest time and your mind to make it happen, to make changes, to convince your crew, your team to think in a different way, but it doesn't cost more. So it's only a question of a decision. I'm not talking about the investments we did. That's a big money. But I'm talking about small things that we can do and that will make a big, especially when you talk about entertainment and arts and so on. I think I'm pretty sure that they can influence a lot of people.
No doubt about it. And I really applaud what you've done with all of that to this point.
Thank you.
So, Roberta, and you know, beyond the philanthropic and the social impact initiatives, back to the festival itself, back in 2005, I believe, you brought Rock in Rio beyond Brazil, beyond the borders, to other countries, starting with Portugal and Spain. And I wonder what the thought was at the time, what inspired you to take it to the next level, and what some of the challenges you might have encountered along the way when you expanded to Europe.
Well, in fact, what motivated us was the For a Better World project. We want, and we still want, we are still in this move, we want to connect to people all around the world in a strong way, and that's why we work so hardly in communication and in bringing people together with Rock in Rio brand, so getting fans to Rock in Rio brand. So we have a strong connection, we have a confident connection with them, and to be able to mobilize them in towards a better world. So that's what we are looking for, using music as an instrument for all of that, music and entertainment. So going to Portugal was, I mean, the first step to this global movement that we are constructing. We usually say that we want to be the World Cup of music and being able to mobilize a lot of and millions of people. So the challenge of going to another country, and it's curious to see that it's always the same, every new country, different, but the same things happen. So the most exciting thing is that, and the biggest challenge, is that you have to create a new culture. It's not yours and not theirs. I mean, you have to let them know how you work, because we are talking about a big event, and we have, I mean, a lot of things also to share, but also being able to listen and understand how different that country thinks or acts, and find a way between both ways of thinking to create this new culture of your team. So our team today is totally mixed with Brazilians, Portuguese, Americans, Spanish, and there's not one unique culture. We created our own culture, and we have been able to share with new countries, and it's beautiful to see how when you share this and then you are open to what others have to say, that you make a difference in the country. So nowadays in Portugal, for example, people refer to the year if it's the year of Rock and Rio or not. So it's good. It's good to, I mean, it's good to hear that, and it's good to see that kids with 10 years old, they are now, I mean, when they were born, Rock and Rio was already there. So Rock and Rio really became part of the country, and that's what we want, to be really close and to be there for as many years as we can.
That brings me to another question, Roberta, which is the typical pattern is it's every 2 years in a given country,
yes.
Correct? And what is the rationale behind it not being an annual event?
Actually, because for us, and what we do is that Rock in Rio, for example, Rock in Rio U.S. is already happening. At the end, you have 4 days of party, but it's already happening. The Rock in Rio movement is all this time and communicating with fans and talking to people and getting involved creating the expectations to be at the event. So
yes.
If you do this every year, I mean, you wouldn't have the time. It doesn't mean that we cannot consider that. There's a lot of people talking to us to consider this option to do every year here in the U.S. It's not what we are planning until now. But, I mean, it's not that it can't be considered, but it gives us, having every 2 years, we have a lot of, we have more time to relation to create this relation with the audience. And that's very important to us. It's not about hiding talent and selling tickets. When you get to know, and I'm sure and I hope you're going to be there with us, that to see how the City of Rock works. And it's all about a whole experience. We are not inviting people to go there and watch Bruno Mars concerts. They can do that everywhere, but
right.
They cannot leave the City of Rock experience anywhere else.
That's correct. That's very unique. And we'll get into that a little bit more about the City of Rock a little further on, because I want to dive into that more deeply. But, yes, it's an experience. It's well beyond just a festival. And so that's a good segue, Roberta, to start talking about the U.S. debut. You're coming for the first time to the U.S. in May, 2 weekends in May this year, one for rock, one for pop, and effectively taking over the Las Vegas Strip with acts like Metallica and No Doubt, John Mayer, Taylor Swift, John Legend, just a few of the many names we can expect from this incredible debut. And as I understand it, officially tickets go on sale starting tomorrow. But you put tickets on pre-sale before announcing talent names, which was, again, a pretty bold move for a festival that has yet to penetrate the American consciousness. So I wonder what your strategic thinking was behind that.
Well, it has a lot to do with this, with what we were talking about, creating the relation. And also, the good news are that we did some research, especially in California, that is our primary market, and we have since a few months ago, 51% of knowledge of Rock and Rio brand.
Mm.
So we understood that we had already everything we needed to make it happen, and it really worked well. We had people buying from 32 different countries and from 46 states from the U.S. So that's that was a very good sign. And those people are talking to their friends, sharing, incentivizing more people to come, talking about the City of Rock. So they become part of the Rock and Rio.
Yes. And as I understand it, almost every time you put tickets on sale for a Rock and Rio, it sells out very fast. What are your expectations for the U.S. shows?
Well, we don't have that expectation for this first edition, because our main goal now is to be able to show and to tell to the American audience what Rock and Rio is about, to explain them what is the City of Rock about. That is a like a theme park of music where you're going to go there with friends and family to have fun, to be happy, and you're going to have the best act always. So, I mean, so you're going to go there for music, but mainly to enjoy yourself and to enjoy your friends. You're going to find attractions like the giant zip line, 600 feet long, that cross over the crowd during the concert. You have the giant hill wheel. You have three rock streets. There are themed streets where you're going to find a lot of street artists. That's the big match. Each rock street has its own stage and will be showing the culture of three different countries, Brazil, UK, and the U.S.
Right.
But what I like most about the rock street is that you have a lot of street artists playing with the audience. And it's like the rock street's like 20 little houses with
like
the
a
scenography
village.
Of those. It's like a village designed like with the scenography of each of one of these countries, and with stores, with food from these countries, products from these countries. And you're going to have, of course, the music from each country playing there. But again, when you walk along the street and you have a magician and you play with a magician, or you get a draw from a cartoonist, or you see someone dancing and you dance with them, or someone playing and you ask a special music and they play for you, that's where magic really happens. That's
yes.
the experience that we want. So
yeah, that's what's so different from what I can tell, Roberta, is it really is an immersive Vegas-type experience. I mean, you've teamed with MGM and Cirque du Soleil to build this 33-acre city of rock, and I don't know of any other festival that goes to that extent to create so many different experiences in one sort of city within a city, if you like.
Yeah, that's a big challenge. We don't have a reference. We don't have how to say Rock and Roll is like something.
No.
So we have to invest a lot in communication, invest a lot in talking to people and explaining what is this, and showing that doors open at 3, close at 2 a.m., and if they don't get there early, they are going to be feeling sorry because they didn't, made part of everything they could. And we have interesting things there. The City of Rock, for example, for those who are listening to us and don't know, it's a venue with a permanent venue. There, of course, MGM and Cirque and so on will be doing other kind of events. But Rock and Rio team designed the venue. And you're going to have artificial grass. So it's a flat area. So it's more comfortable. You're going to be cleaning all the time. So if you want to sit down and have fun and or eat something, you're going to be able to sit down. We're going to have permanent restrooms, and no portable restrooms here, what makes already a big difference. So all the infrastructure that we are investing on it with MGM and Cirque will make all the difference. And that also created a big difference in Rock and Rio, that because of the infrastructure we provide, we kind of we attract many different people. So if you take a look in a traditional fast, well, you're going to have people from, 18 to 25 and or 30. But in Rock and Rio, 75% of our public goes from 15 years old to 50 years old.
Right.
So it's a very family-friendly event, what is also new. And kids are really welcome. Kids under 16 have to come with a responsible someone, an adult. But they are really welcome, and we have attractions for everybody. So if you come with your family and you better like dancing, you can go to Rock Street USA, and you have a street dance stage there. Or if your son better like EDM, he can go to the electronic tent. And your husband better like rock, you can go to UK Street and have rock and roll all day playing.
Right.
And all the concerts in the two main stages, that's something also cool, is that the two main stages don't play together. So if you want to go there and watch all concerts, you can do it.
It's very exciting. And yet, it has been said that Rock and Rio US may be the biggest gamble of your family's festival empire to date, given that it does face a pretty different competitive landscape here in the U.S., are you at all concerned about, for example, Roberta, the proximity of Rock and Rio U.S. to things like Coachella happening a month ahead and Bonnaroo and Electric Daisy Carnival happening a month after?
Well, actually not. I would say that Challenge would do Rock and Rio back in 1985. That's tough to understand. But, we are being so welcome here in the U.S., and people are so excited, and it's such a different offer. It's a different proposal. It's that we are really not concerned, and it's such a big market that you have space for everybody. And we are talking, as we were saying, we are talking about a different audience. We are talking about a different kind of offer of attraction. So, you won't find a lot of pop music in traditional festivals. You won't find that kind of infrastructure. I usually do a joke that our camping area is MGM Hotel, so that makes a big difference. We don't have camping areas. So it's a very different proposal. So
I grant you that. The only thought
that
I had to further expand on that point is that, consumers have limited amounts of time and money, and that's a whole bunch of concerts that are happening in a sequence, pretty close together. But, there's never a good time, right?
But Kelly, what I usually say is that this money is also, you have to decide, people have the same money to decide if they are going to a concert or if they are going out to dinner with friends or if they are going to the movie a few times, to see a movie a few times. It's the same money, not only for concerts, but for all that has to do with leisure and entertainment. So we have to do our best, and we have to offer our best. So we honor the money that people are spending with us, and that's what we are working to.
Indeed. It's kind of like the best of the best music festival and the Las Vegas experience. So I have no doubt it's going to be a massive success. And I do want to point out that there was a wonderful article in the New York Times last summer in July about your dad and about taking Rock and Rio to the U.S. I found it incredibly well done, so I want to encourage our listeners to Google the New York Times article on Roberto Medina and the U.S. Rock and Rio Festival if they'd like to learn more. And again, tickets go on sale tomorrow, January 20th. Roberta, assuming that the U.S. festival is successful as we all expect it to be, what do you anticipate in terms of future expansion globally beyond the U.S.? I think when we sat down together, we talked about the possibility of Dubai and China, but what are the broader expansion ideas that you have over time?
Our main objective now is to have a wonderful first edition in the U.S.
Yes.
That's where we are really focused. And we wanted to create a long-term relation with this country. We are not here to do one edition or two. We came to stay. So I hope to see in 10 years kids here in the U.S. saying, well, is this year of Rock and Rio or not? So that's my expectation. And, of course, to keep our relation with the Portuguese and the Brazilian audience too. But yes, there are dreams to go to Asia, but we gave a pause to this right now because we really want to dedicate to the U.S. We have some conversations with some different groups, but that's after May, and in September we still have.
I should ask that question after May. Well,
yeah,
the last question
May,
I have for you, Roberta, is that I'm curious. Part of my work is as a trusted advisor and a mentor of sorts. As we wrap up our time together today, I'm curious to learn who some of your mentors have been and your thoughts on the importance of having mentors. I expect maybe your father has been one, but...
Yeah, it was actually not my father, not only my father, but my mother. I think that's really relevant, having the opportunity to have people who show us good ways to do things. And of course, it's always our choice, but then it makes it easier if you have people that already know how to do and if they have great experience, and it helps a lot. So of course, my father professionally was not only, but he was a very good leader. He is. And everything that he taught me, we are not the same person. We don't think exactly the same. But of course, I have a lot in me and in my thoughts and the way I do things and that I've learned with them, with him, and also my mother. I mean, so the way you deal with people, the way you deal with life. So not only our parents, but again, all experience with people that has the experience are really, really welcome. I mean, all the time. And for my whole life, that has been really important, and I'm really open to new ideas, new things, and learning all the time.
Well, that is the right attitude. I'm sure it's going to take you far. So, Roberta, I want to thank you. I want to honor your time and thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight. I have every confidence that Rock and Rio US is going to be a huge success, and I can't wait
thank
to see
you.
How it all unfolds.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your audience to be listening to us, and thank you for having us with you. It was a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you, Roberta. And I do want to thank our audience who join us here each week. You're wonderful listeners, and we appreciate your loyalty. We look forward to hearing you all again next week on the next edition of All Access Radio. Good night, everybody.